Well, good morning. All right, we got more response than the first service, so you're here. Good. Hey, my name is Michael Trope. I serve here as the campus pastor, and just so grateful that you are here with us. Excited for the series in Genesis. It's one that is near and dear to me. Obviously, it's a beginning, and so we'll talk about that, and I'll get to that shortly. But I wanted to kind of provide us an update as a church. Max mentioned all these different ways that we aim to serve and to deploy and equip you for the work of ministry. And we do it in many ways. But last week was a beautiful picture for us. We had some lives here, and we showed a picture of us praying over us, these kids and students that we get the opportunity to serve. And you may have received an email, if you check your email once every 5 days or something like that, but you may have received an email from Jacob saying, hey, we're trying to make space because last week was our busiest Sunday outside of Christmas and New Year's in the past couple years here. And that is a beautiful opportunity for us. And that's all before college students move in, specifically in this service. And so why I share all of that, we served 155 kiddos, 0 to 4th grade, 50 students from 5th grade through 12th grade. And it was the most attended service outside of Christmas and New Year's in years here. And that's beautiful. And it shows us a picture of us as a multi-generational campus, as what God is doing and stirring in the heart of men. And so we have a responsibility to serve that. And so as these weeks continue, as we move into the school year, we're asking for prayer. Because we can make plans, we can make adjustments, we can look at all of our facilities and see how we can best serve and grow because we're growing out of spaces here. But we're asking for prayer and discernment and how to do it well to continue to promote a discipleship of our own here. And we're asking for prayer, but also for you to be a part of that. Maybe you come on a Sunday morning or just checking us out for the first time, or we're not saying dive right in, but we're saying, hey, we're all a part of stewarding what God has given us, not just me, not just our staff, but all of us serve a role to lay our talents in the middle and say, how can God use my talents to make much of him here? Because my heart for us is that not that we just come and attend and have a lot of people that, you know, if that's what I'm aiming at, if that's what we're aiming at, I'm all good. I'm tapping out for that. But if God gives us that, let us not be spectators, but disciples to steward what God gives us well and right. And so can you continue to pray for us over these next coming weeks as we get the opportunity to serve and just be flexible as you experience probably some parking lot issues maybe coming in. We had the parking team here, but that's going to continue to be a friction point for us before we plan. But we believe that God is doing a good work here, and you're a part of that plan here as he deploys you amongst our church family. So I just wanted to put that before you. We're aware of it, but we need to steward it well and right, not just for our own design, but what God has for us as a people, and you are a part of that. And so with that being said, we are starting a new series really for the next 14 weeks in Genesis. And like that, the video just showed, it's the big idea for this series is God's intention for his creation. God's design for how life is to be ordered for our human flourishing. God's good design for his world. And so in these weeks ahead, we're going to be living really in Genesis, the end of Genesis 1. We're going to be going through that whole account today. But we're going to be living in certain aspects of Genesis 1. So next week will be image of God. Week after that, sanctity of life, gender and gender roles, sexuality over these next coming weeks. Easy ones, right? Just easy ones that we're going to just go after and softballs for sure. But I love it because I think the gospel speaks to the wholeness of all those things. And so we should and we have a responsibility to speak towards those things that matter in our current landscape and world. And then we'll move on to this aspect of the literate historical narrative of the people of God as we move throughout the series. In saying that, I just want us to approach these weeks with grace, grace and having differing opinions on certain things, also an openness. Because some of us have been formed maybe by church hurt or experiences or teaching that may have not been full or whole. And so approaching these weeks with openness to say, hey, God, Spirit of God, help me reveal through your word what you are doing and how you call us to approach these specific issues. So openness for that and compassion. and how we love one another that may differ from us, but how we have compassion through that. So I am excited for this series. And so before we read Genesis 1, I just want to talk to you a little bit. You see, I'm a fan of art in very many ways, but one of my favorite pictures is the pictures at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I have not gone yet. It's one on my bucket list to go. But the Sistine Chapel in the early 16th century, so 1508 through 1512, Michelangelo, who was a sculptor by trade, was actually commissioned by the Pope of that time to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, really to kind of promote the power of the Roman Catholic Pope at the time. And so originally, the Pope had commissioned him to, on the ceiling, to paint the 12 disciples based on the makeup of the ceiling. But Michelangelo had a different idea. He said, he petitioned the Pope to say, can I create the story of God from creation to Christ? And he was given free authority to do that. And the beautiful thing about this is it actually took only 4 years to paint 5,800 square feet of this ceiling. But it told the story of God, creation, to the fall, to through the prophets, to Jesus and the genealogy up to that point. But at the center of the Sistine Chapel ceiling is this picture right there. It's the creation story. There's 9 accounts, but this one in particular just shows us a painting of how Michelangelo viewed what was the essential founding idea, and it's all found in the creation story. And see, why do I share this picture and idea with you? Because Michelangelo knew that this is the grounding story of the grand story we as a people are invited into today. You see, he evoked thought and centrality to the creation story. But I want to show and read and teach through Genesis 1 today, not from a science book perspective, not from a science report, but from a poetical picture that I believe God was painting with specificity so we could understand who the story's about. Because it'll lay the foundation for how we approach these weeks ahead and really our lives as we move through this series. And so why do I want to do that? Because we must remember that the original audience wasn't us. We are beneficiaries of this story. But the original audience of this Genesis account is the Hebrew people. You see, they had just entered the land, or they were entering the land in which God had promised. And he wanted to remind them through a picture of whose they were. Because Joshua 1:8, it talks, hey, we want to remind you of the book of the law, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. We want you to remember and meditate on that. Why? Because they would often forget, just like we do. So he wanted to paint the picture of who the grand story was about. He wanted to paint the idea that their lives, their identities, aren't found in the land they're going into, they're found in him. And so we will unpack that today. So what I'm going to do, I don't do it often, but we're going to read the whole picture of Genesis 1 together. And we're going to read Genesis 1 through chapter 2, verse 3. And here's what I want you to do before I even read it, and before we read it together, just take note of words that are repeated. This is one of the most beautiful poems if you study it and study it in depth. It's the way it has symmetry, the way things fold on each other, the way God unrolls his plan of creation, it's beautiful. So recognize words that are repeated because they will help us understand the story better and God's picture he was painting. So we'll read it together. Here we go. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and the beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, hey, let's make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And another poem is inserted. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created a male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the sea, over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything. He saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Now I will breathe. Right? Woo! That's a beautiful account, a beautiful picture for us. And here's what you're going to hear, a simple message today, but here's what you're not going to hear. You're not going to hear, hey, Mike, is this a literal 24 hours? Is this a literal 7 days? Is this, are you a young earth guy, old earth guy? Hey, that's not the point of this picture. The point of this picture is, I think, three foundational things that we should take away that paints the whole narrative we're about to embark upon. And the first point I want to be before us, it's simple, but it's this. God is creator. God is creator. I know, shocked, right? That shocks you, but it's something that is important for us to hold to. You see, in the beginning it says, God created. Those first words are important. The first opening lines of books are important. A Tale of Two Cities, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It paints a picture of what's to come. And so in this narrative, God created. The word used for God in this is the Hebrew name Elohim, which is used over 2,500 times in the Old Testament alone. And what that means in reference to God is supreme one. Supreme one. The root of that word is strength and power. Out of the gate, it presents God as the supreme strength and power. One commentator writes the name, "In the name Elohim, it included in one person all the powers, mights, and influences by which the world was first created and is now governed and maintained." You see, why was this important out of the gate for the people it was being written to remember? Because he wanted them to remember he was all-powerful, not them. He was the one who was all-powerful, not them. Because as they went into the land, if you unpack Joshua, just a few chapters after he told them to remember the book of the law, they turned to what was created in Joshua 7, and they worshiped false idols. Because they were so easily to forget their heritage and how God set them apart. They'd forget how he, by the plagues, again, showing his power over creation, led them out of Egypt when they were in slavery prior. How he then parted the Red Sea, showing again his power over creation. How he had a cloud of fire before them. How he had given them manna in the desert and quail to come down and water to be found. He was the one showing himself true and bringing them into this land of milk and honey. But they would often and so easily forget that he was the one who was all-powerful and made that happen, not them. He wanted to remind them that he is the one the story is about. And why should that matter for us today? Because simply we must remember that God is the all-powerful one, not us. That he created the world in which we live today and spoke even our existence. Our very breath in our lungs is a gift from God today that he is upholding and not us. We often are deluded to think that tomorrow is promised because we're here today. We're often thinking that tomorrow or something, we are in control of our own destiny, what's going to happen after this, our own careers, and all the next things that are happening in our life because we think we have control. But that's a delusion because we control nothing. I mean, we may have some inputs of how we steward our lives, but even our thoughts are a gift from God because he spoke even our existence into being. What he wanted to remind us about today is not the fact that they have any control of it, but I'm all powerful, and that's good news. That he's reminding the people at the outset that time doesn't bound me, creation doesn't keep me, I am who I am, and that is Elohim, God over all, through all, and in all. And he's the one who's got it in full control, not you. But also following this word Elohim is something else he wants to reveal is the word bara. In the Hebrew, it means to create, to form, to shape. Why did he form this world? Why did he give us the sun, the stars, the trees, the birds, and even created us in his own image? Because he wanted to share the overflow of who he was with us. He wanted to not keep it to himself. He didn't need us, but he created us to share himself with us. He to show them us, them and us, that God cares, to show his creative nature and person with us. And he did it to show that God is not a distant God to them. He is a God that can be known and a God that loves them. And he shared it with us. You see, growing up, I was a Boy Scout for a hot minute. Like, I was a Boy Scout for about 6 months of my life. I thought I wanted to just grow up as a Boy Scout. But then I realized you had to go out in nature. And I was like, I'm good. I'd rather play sports. You know, I'd rather just be with my friends and not go camping and be with a whole bunch of bugs and bears up in upstate New York. I was like, I'm tapping out from that. Right? That was my growing up. But then as I got older, I started to appreciate going out in nature, going hiking in the Adirondack Mountains and where I was from. And I remember one time when I was on a kayaking trip down the Delaware River. Now, the Delaware River is meets the tri-state area in Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. And so I kayaked 40 miles down the Delaware River. And I remember one moment, like it's still so fresh because it was just a snapshot in my life. I remember stopping in the middle of the Delaware River and no one was around. It was complete silence. But that complete silence caused my heart to be in awe, because around me were these the greenest green trees you will have ever seen, the sun shining down. And it caused me to just caused my heart to wonder, to become in awe of a God that created all of this. And I get to get a picture of what he created, and this God shared it with me. Like, this God cares to share the overflow of his creation with me. It's why when you go on trips, when you hear the stories about the Grand Canyon, it causes you to be like, how small you are, but how weighty God is. And what it made my heart, what it makes our hearts do, is that this God is knowable and loves us. And what it would be a reminder for the people is, yes, this is a land that will be flowing with milk and honey, but you aren't to identify with the milk and honey. You are to identify with me, the one that is all-powerful, the one that that loves you enough to share this with you. And if you hold to me, it will be good for you and you're flourishing in the land. But if you go your own way, it's gonna not be how he designed it to be. This was a picture for us as God, as is creator, Elohim, who is all-powerful, not us. He is a loving God that we are to hold to cause our hearts to marvel and fear at who he is and what he would allow us to know in who he is. But not only does this whole passage talk about God as being creator, secondly, it points to this idea that God created with intention. This account talks about this idea God created with intention. When we, as a family, we just spent our first week in the house, so that's been super nice. But during our hotel stay for 6 weeks, we watched two things. The Olympics, obviously, and all we watched as a family was Shark Tank. Any of you know Shark Tank? Right? And so the whole premise of Shark Tank is inventors come up with inventions or businesses, and then they pitch the sharks, who are the venture capitalists, to invest in their business. And we have a few of the shark inventions at our house, and one of them is the Squatty Potty. I didn't think that would be appropriate to bring in here, but it works. Anyways, but the other one is this one, and many of you may have it. Any of you know of the Scrub Daddy, right? The Scrub Daddy just makes you smile, right? But it generally, it really works. It's the second most popular profitable invention that has come from Shark Tank. And I mean, you can clean anything with it. It stays hard with cold water and warm. It gets soft, so you're like, this thing is amazing. And I wish there was a Costco here, because this is where I bought Costco. I'm still pining for Costco and Tyler one day. But I bought an 8-pack because obviously we need 8, right? We don't just need one, we need 8. But the purpose of this is it was intended to clean, and it does an amazing job of it. And what they say is you use it with certain soap, certain things, but here's what happens. If you deviate from the original use of it and you use different certain substances, it breaks down the effectiveness of this sponge. It doesn't work as it's intended to work. And so it helps paint us a picture of the inventor had a specific idea for creating this in a way in which things should work. And that directly applies to God's intention for creation. He had an intention and a purpose and an order with which he created that we need to lean into as a church, because it's shown within this Genesis account. You see, Genesis 2 speaks this idea, the earth was without form or void. And darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was over the face of the waters. These words, without form or void, in other translations, it means formless and empty. But in the Hebrew, here's what it means. It means there's formless and void means wild and waste. The earth was wild and waste. They would have understood the terminology as chaotic nothingness. In our Western world, we think there was nothing and then there was something, but the Hebrew people who would be receiving this message would say there's chaotic nothingness, that there was disorder, no purpose. But here's what God does, is God creating, he brings order and purpose to the chaotic nothingness. You see, verses 3 through 31, I'm not reading it again, obviously. but the idea of God intentioning the formless, the nothingness, and bringing order and purpose to it all. And he brought order to his creation specifically and completely, and it was for our good. And we see this by God specifically. I told you to watch certain words that were used. In days 1 through 3, what did he do? He separated. In days 4 through 6, he filled. In days one, he brought light to the darkness and he created time. God separated the waters and skies in day 2, separated the land from the seas in day 3. There was order being brought from the chaotic nothingness. And what does he do? This is why I love Genesis 1. It's a beautiful poem because it lays on top of each other, the days. And so in day 4, he filled what was produced in day 1 with giving the sun, moon, and stars. In day 5, he filled what was created on day 2 with fish and birds. Day 6, which fills in day 3, God created animals and humans. He was rolling out his plan with intention and design for us to rule with him, to us to fill the earth, to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth in which we have been created. And what does it say at the end of each days 1 through 5? God says that order and purpose for creation is good, right? He says that word in the Hebrew means complete in itself. That God's intention for creation was the intention, the chaotic nothingness, and bringing completeness by his design, his way. But what happens in day 6? He said, he looks at everything he creates and says, it's very good. Not just humanity, the fullness of which he's created. And he says it's very good. It's abundantly above and beyond good. You know, when I was reading that and studying that, it made me remember Jesus' words, and he says, I've come to bring life, and life what? Abundantly. Bringing us back into the original design in which we were created to know him. And so why does God reveal this about himself in creation? Because he wanted to remind the Hebrew people and us today that there is an unfolding plan that he sovereignly holds that is better than the plan could be on their own. That there is a way in which he created the world, in which he created us to walk with him and cultivate the world, a way in which he designed us for our human flourishing, not to rob us, but to give us fullness of life here on earth. He wanted to remind the Hebrew people and us to not hold to our self-sufficient, I got it, God, good, you're on your own, I got my own plans, I'll make this new land my own, my way. No, he said, hold to me. I've intentioned it for your good. But not only he created this plan with creative intention, but he also created with mind that he had the full story in hand. He also created a redemptive plan that would fully come at just the right time. You see, God had an intended and purpose and design for all of creation and us as humanity. But we know Genesis 3 comes, and we'll talk about that specifically in 5 weeks. We live on this side of the fall. And what happens with us, apart from Christ, we live our own ways. This chaotic nothingness exists within us, and we have disordered affections. We have misplaced purpose. But God, in his redemptive plan, he sent Jesus into our midst. The true light was coming into the world to everyone, and he was coming into the world. God was all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving of us, that he sent Jesus to reverse the curse of our waste and our wild, our chaotic nothingness. Because he knew we would go at it alone. He knew we would try to control the narrative. He knew that we would find our identity in ourselves and the created world instead of him, and he wanted to redeem it, to say, no longer are you slaves in Egypt. No longer are you slaves to hurt, pain, sin, brokenness. No, I have a better plan in my son, and I'm giving him to reverse that curse, to say, you're defined by how I created you, not in all the things of this world. He did not call us to be slaves, church. He called us to be sons and daughters of him. And he's given us Jesus to welcome us back, to repent of our sin, to lean into him. God painted a story of intention into the creation narrative that would remind the Hebrew people and us today that he is an all-knowing God, all-loving God, and all-powerful God who in what he has created is complete and good. But here is my last point, and this is where it all ends. God calls us into his rest. This is my last point. Genesis 2, 1 through 3, it paints this picture. It's why I read it. God had finished all his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work. It says he blessed it and made it holy. Do you want to know what's interesting on this creation account? Is it excludes a few simple words that were a part of the previous 6 days. It excludes the words, and there was evening and there was morning, such and such day. It excludes those words in day seven. It doesn't mention there's an end to his rest. Because God is continuing to call people into that rest today. One of the fascinating things in our Western world, how do we go about our days, right? We go about our days, and it's not the evening and morning, right? Our days start with our mornings, correct? Right? And what happens in our mornings? What happens after we grab our nectar of heaven, aka coffee, in the morning? We got to have that. What happens right after? We go to what? Work. You see, in our Western world, we are defined by productivity, what we do, our plans, what we can produce, just like the Hebrew people could have been defined in their enslavement to Egypt by how many bricks they produce. But he wanted to remind the Hebrew people, even in this creation narrative, their days don't start with mourning and work. Their identity doesn't come from what they do. It starts in the evening and rest, because their rest comes from who they identify, which is God, not their stuff. You see, that is what God is calling us into. One of the most revelational things in my walk with God is between where I came from prior to coming here is one of the most transformational things that God just revealed in my heart is, hey, you need to have a Sabbath and a true Sabbath to rest. And so Friday, the team knows, hey, that's my Sabbath. I love you guys, but Friday I don't touch anything unless someone's dying. I'll be there for you. But why do I do that? Because God has promised in and of himself that he will complete the work. I just need to rest into his. And you know what that does? It helps me understand I am not a product of what I do. My identity isn't in pastoring you. My identity is in him, and I get to pastor you from a place of rest. And God is calling us into his rest to lean into Christ to say, hey, it's not about what you do or your identities in producing, or I'm a nurse, I do this, that, or the other thing. No, our identities and our lives should be found in the all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing God. And from there, we live and rest and have our being. It's why Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you what? Rest. Church, we are reminded from this creation story that God is welcoming us back into his rest today. Because we are not human doings, we're human beings created in his image. And the day is still going, and it is good, and it is holy, and he calls us back. Hebrews 4, as I close, says, paraphrase it, but it says, there remains therefore a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For the one who has entered his rest has himself also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest. Let us be obedient to what God has designed and find our identity in him, lest anyone fall through following the same example of disobedience. Church, the good news today is that the story begins with him. It doesn't begin with us. It begins with an all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing God that calls us not to effort ourselves, but to calls us to him, to give us our fullness of life by resting in his work. And that's good news. Church, let's pray. God, I thank you. I thank you that the story, the central character is not ourselves and our flaws and our brokenness, but the central story is you. Elohim, the supreme God who created everything, who created our very being in your image, who allowed us to share yourself with us as we observe all that you have created and the talents that we have. It's all a gift from you. God, the story is about you. We don't have to find power in ourselves. You are the all-powerful God. We don't have to find love in ourselves our own way. You are the all-loving God. We don't need to know all the plans because you have intended creation to be lived with purpose. And it's not to rob us, but to give us the best things, which is yourself. And God, I pray we become a people of love and rest and find our identity with you and you alone. Purge us of our self-sufficiency and our sin. Help us to be obedient to your commands, to live as you intended creation to be lived. And holding on to Christ, live that full and abundant life, not without imperfection, but by holding to you our only hope of this world. God, you are the holy God, and you call us into rest. God, I pray that as we venture into these weeks ahead, God, let us hold open hands for how you've designed this to be lived and to find our beginning and end in you, and you alone. God, we need you and we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.